Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Giant Conversations number 7, and this time with a very special guest. We have with us, obviously, Tommy, but I mean, Tommy and me are no longer special. Hi, Tommy.
That's right. Yeah, I've heard that my entire life.
Yeah, exactly. But we have Timo, our esteemed CTO. Hi, Timo.
Hello.
Hello. That's wonderful. And we'll actually talk about something we wrote in a blog post recently, the launch of Giant Swarm 3.0. So this will be a Giant Swarm-centric one, but I'll kick it off with our jingle. Good one, Tommy. Thank you for contributing.
Yeah, sure. That's Fiverr again.
Fiverr again. So we'll see where all this jingle stuff will lead us in the future. But yes, so Timo, let's start at the beginning. The idea is to go a bit around the history of where we actually came from and how we ended up with a copy provider or several copy providers. So maybe at the beginning, why did we even have operators, and why did we even do the Kubernetes thing?
I was thinking about the beginning, and the beginning is it's almost 20 years, Ollie.
Oh, 20
when,
years. Okay.
When we first met, and
okay, we're going that beginning. Very good.
I wanted to look it up, but I didn't found it. It was the first Web Monday in Cologne, and I think it's almost 20 years. Maybe this November, but I'm not sure.
In the basement of Hallmackenreuther.
Yes. Just as a side note, obviously we can go back to Kubernetes, which is not 20 years back. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we not only met 20 years ago, but also started working together. And I think we started using the cloud in 2007, S3, very EC2, early. Something like that. We've used containers already, OpenVZ and LXC. And, you know, when Docker and Kubernetes, or when basically CoreOS and Docker came out, we founded Giant Swarm because we knew that it's going to change a lot, and we were very excited and very happy about it. And at first, we started kind of building on top of CoreOS tooling, Fleet.
And Fleet?
Etcd was already in it, and it was based on systemd. We had something we called Chains, which is very similar to pods, But then Kubernetes came, and we decided to pivot and switch all over to Kubernetes. And and then the question came up, or the most important thing for us was to automate the lifecycle of Kubernetes and make it really robust to do upgrades and, you know, have a seamless experience for our customers. And then we thought about, like, how can we do this automation? Since the platform itself is also kind of a microservice environment, and Kubernetes was built to run microservices, we believe that the pattern, the reconciliation, and the control loop of Kubernetes controllers is the best pattern we have to manage such an environment. And that's when we started building operators, which is basically the same thing as Kubernetes controllers, just another word. I think it was KubeCon in Berlin when I first presented our Kubernetes in Kubernetes inception in a talk.
Kubeception.
Yeah. And but back then there were already talks with others in the community that we want to build up like a standard around managing Kubernetes with Kubernetes, like having proper Kubernetes resources. But we continue to to develop our own operators because we had customers and we needed to operate lots of clusters and couldn't wait until like the standard was established. Mm-hmm. So for a couple of years, we developed our own operators.
I need to step one step back because I always tell the story that we also thought like how will that company make money? Will we be consultants around Kubernetes or will we like manage infrastructure? And we wanted to like manage infrastructure, and obviously the Kubernetes part makes sense, but also for me in my head, it's always like, okay, if we then go to companies and say like Kubernetes is the hot new shit, like you need to really use that and we are using Ansible to automate it. It sounds a lot better if we say, and we use Kubernetes because it's the hot new shit, like it's the right tool for the job and we use Kubernetes too. So that's always kind of the anecdote I also put out there, which might also, not even be totally correct, but it sounds fun.
No, it's true. I mean, also for the engineers, I mean, it's like you're providing a Kubernetes interface to customers, and then you have to use the old stuff that you didn't like before to automate it. It doesn't make sense.
Doesn't sound fun. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but I mean, yeah, back then there wasn't any standard really. So we needed to do our own operators because we had customers and we needed to do stuff. But I remember we always were listening in on the CARPI developments and so on and so forth and very early on and were part of those meetings. Do you remember the time when we thought now is the time to really change and go all in into this standard?
I think that was kind of gradually always looking at how stable is the interface, how many of the features that we know we really need to have are already in, and yeah, I think it was still, in that time before COVID that we decided to go all in that direction and did, like we called it back then, a hive sprint. So we did a hive sprint with a bunch of teams where we just tried to figure out what's the state of the different providers within Cluster API, what are the features that are missing, stuff like that. And there was a lot of planning that we also had to go through, nitty-gritty details of a lot of things because, our operators obviously evolved over the years and we have real production experience because it's not only that we provide a platform that you can download, it's we are operating all the platforms for our customers. So we're wearing the pager. We're getting up at night if something doesn't work. So there was a lot of operational knowledge codified in our operators. So yeah, we had to carefully plan this switch over.
I remember there was a long time when there were still a lot of changes in CARPI. Where we just said we can't change, or like it needed to come to a certain stable state where it was developing from a certain idea, and then the decision came to really look at teams and figure that out.
Yeah, I mean the thing, and it's with every upstream project that we kind of integrate into our platform. Obviously it needs to stabilize, and also you need to look at a healthy committers, community around it. We are seeing that right now with quite a few projects within the ecosystem, where there's just a single vendor that there's a risk, you know, not only if it's a VC-backed company that the company is running out of money or is getting sold, but also license changes have been there recently. So, and it's basically for our customers is also like if we do risk management with ourselves, like having giant swarm operators operating the infrastructure, or having cluster API controllers operating all those clusters, where there's like lots of different companies. There's like Microsoft and VMware and Red Hat and you know, lots of other names in there that are developing the standard. That's also the reason why we said like we want to minimize that risk for our customers as well. And obviously with that amount of people being involved in the project, there's more use cases that the community is seeing and building into Cluster API than just coming from us as a single vendor, which is the benefit for us. If we have a new customer and there's a new scenario, it's just easier for us to provide the features that are needed with Cluster API, because in the long run, there's going to be more implemented into Cluster API than we could implement in the same time into our own operators.
Yeah, and it has always been the case that we said we want, we believe in open source, we believe in a community, community, and we actually don't necessarily want a lock-in for the customer. It needs to be something where there are different providers and so on and so forth, and the lock-in as such is that we're providing a good service. And that they want us to continue doing what we're doing, but we want them to be able to theoretically split off and do it by themselves or do it with another provider if they feel the need to do that, and being very close to the standard. So I still remember those discussions, and we did that repeatedly going into open source projects where we see that they are now at a state where we can stop doing something that we needed to do custom by ourselves because there was nothing there yet. So, I mean, that's an ongoing giant swarm trend, always trying to stand on the shoulders of giants. Oh, the word game. Wonderful.
It's also a question of building a sustainable platform for our customers. So if we have projects that we know that are stable and healthy, it's much better than building the hottest latest shit basically. Having to replace everything every other year would be very hard.
And it's something we often tell customers, open source tools might not be the hottest thing out there at this very moment, and you could find a closed source thing that has a few more features you want, but long term that open source thing will likely win. And it's just like, this is the path. That is not a goal. Like you build a feature list now and you need that now, and whatever builds that feature list now has won. It's about the path going forward. And for us, the copy path is the right path. So,
And part of that release that we put out during KubeCon is not only that, under the hood, we replaced our cluster management with Cluster API, but it's also that over the years, the platform on top of Kubernetes has evolved. And the management interface, which is the management cluster in terms of terminology coming from Cluster API. A user has access to the management cluster, and then on the management cluster you can say how many clusters you want to have, but you can also manage applications, meaning Helm charts basically. You can manage secrets, you can manage policies, you can read vulnerability reports, you can manage observability, all these kind of things have been integrated. It's all the same interface. It's, again, custom resources in Kubernetes that kind of extend the functionality of Kubernetes itself. And through Flux, which has also been a big topic at KubeCon, because there's new support by quite a few companies from the ecosystem for the Flux project, and we are among them. And through Flux, you can manage the whole thing with GitOps. So you can basically spin up a whole platform with GitOps, including all the infrastructure that is necessary for this platform. And that's why we called it Giant Swarm Platform 3.0, because it's kind of the third generation of what we have been building in the past 10 years.
Yeah, and it's as you say, it's no longer... We, to a certain extent, need to stop talking about Kubernetes because it's a platform that is bigger than just Kubernetes with a lot of stuff running in it, and now it being an integrated whole that works very efficiently together and very in an integrated fashion. And that's probably also because, like, we've been working on this for some time, as some people can attest to. A little bit. So from thinking back over the last 2 years, what were the problems or the roadblocks, or what did we need to contribute, and what do you remember were the pitfalls where it got harder, including stuff like us needing to provide an upgrade path from existing systems? So can you shed a bit of a light on what that journey was like over the last few years?
Besides maybe more the organizational things, like trying to figure out lots of questions around, like, okay, how do we want to do we want to have forks of the controllers to be under control of the source, so we can do patches and then bring them upstream? Like, how does this whole process work, that we can kind of extend cluster API with the features that we need by not being blocked upstream, because, you know, agreement needs to be reached. And, you know, obviously within open source, sometimes this is a little bit slower because, like, you know, a proposal needs to be made, and then, you know, people need to understand why we're doing the change, what we're adding, stuff like that. So, figure out how we are gonna work with upstream in this case. Concrete examples were like, how do we manage, for instance, worker pools, node pools on AWS, not only by having a controller in Kubernetes spinning off VMs, but we also wanted to have support for auto-scaling groups. That was very early on when we discussed. And, you know, if you think of all the functionality that an auto-scaling group in AWS has, including spinning off spot instances and stuff like that, which we made available to our customers before. Bringing these features upstream, and that, I think there was another one about private networking where it's still ongoing upstream, and we found a solution how to extend it to provide completely private clusters to our customers without, you know, NAT gateways and then using proxies through like a transit gateway and stuff like that. So it's kind of, we needed to extend quite a bit of functionality, and that took obviously also some time to build this. But in general, I think it was a very good exercise for us to also look at the architecture, look at the way how Cluster API has designed things, because, like, our design was has been grown by just, you know, doing things and getting things working. But somebody sat down and really thought about like how this architecture should look like in Cluster API. That helped us to also adapt our composability of, you know, the whole cluster management. And along the way, what were other things that we stumbled upon? I don't think there's like very...
It's like different providers. Like I still remember that for one of our customers, we needed a Cluster API for VCD. And there we needed very special features. So we needed to figure out like how to work with VMware-based teams, like teams at VMware, to figure out how to get VCD Cluster API implementation up to speed. Like theoretically, it's all from, I think, from my head, sometimes the most important part is that like we need to work with outside Giant Swarm teams. To a certain extent, Giant Swarm grew by working with external teams and being bigger without being bigger. But that obviously creates an overhead. And at the same time, Carpi always says like, okay, there is a Carpi implementation for all these providers. But yeah, it's not always the same thing. And there might be a special feature that is needed here or there, or it's not at the same stage at all times. So I still believe like in the long term, it makes new implementations easier. But you need to look at each and every one of them.
Yeah. One important thing was that we wanted to have a seamless migration towards cluster API managed clusters for all our customers. So that means every customer that is running on Giant Swarm clusters will be migrated over to Cluster API. So we put a lot of effort in researching and how we can seamlessly kind of migrate from our, we call them vintage clusters by now. And this is still ongoing, but we have full automation ready. So basically we've automated all the migration. It's just about like getting this done with the customers now, so we can finally turn off the last of our own operators that is still operating clusters. But yeah, that was definitely also a big part of the last year, making this whole process robust. And then at some point we also invested in a team to have all of this fully tested in an automated way. Not only testing new releases all the time, but also testing the migration itself, really making sure that also all the components that are running on top of Kubernetes are still fine. So the whole platform works, and by now, it's quite a few CNCF projects that we are operating 24/7 on top of Kubernetes.
And it needs to have feature parity to a certain extent, and it needs to, there's lots of discussions. I remember, like on the customer side, because obviously, as you said, that new Giant Swarm 3.0 platform is much more of a platform. It's our path towards a fully GitOps managed thing with theoretically auto upgrades with Renovate and whatnot. So we needed that benefit, but at the same time, make it as easy as possible for customers to do that migration without having to throw away everything they did previously and like keep some of their methodology and some of their processes. So I still remember that, like lots of discussions there where I think it's one of our strengths to not shy away from those discussions and talk to customers like, here you will need to change because this is how it gets better. And here we can mimic the old way of doing things. So yeah, that was a lot of discussion too. So
yeah. And out of experience, we knew that a big enterprise has a really hard time to migrate every application, every team from one cluster to the other. And
we
that's
did that once we required that once, and that wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, and then that led to the decision that we want to. Still is a lot of work because teams need to be prepared as well, but it's less work than migrating from one cluster to the other if we just upgrade the cluster itself. We're upgrading to the same Kubernetes version, so it's a migration between what is managing the cluster, but it's also under the hood changing the architecture of the cluster a little bit. But the versions of all the components will stay the same because we want to minimize the risk during the migration. And then afterwards, we can do a Kubernetes upgrade again. We can upgrade applications again, but we didn't want to make change the world release and basically change everything. We wanted to change as few things as possible to migrate over to Cluster API.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, new customers are already running Cluster API, so it's really now is like a large part is that migration part that we need to work on, you know? So that we need to finish, which is also a procedural thing with customers going one step after the other, not impacting our security. I mean, we had that with the PSP PSS move, where I still remember when we had the other podcast with Zach, 20% of the people out there actually use PSPs. We have that all enabled with all our customers, and because security is a crucial point. So we need to keep that all on par. But So now we have that 3.0 thing. You already hinted on like it being an integrated platform. Can you give a few other examples of where it differs and where it gives new capabilities with a bit more detail? Like what is the shiny new thing that makes this really worthwhile and also interesting for us?
I think what I mentioned, like having GitOps throughout not only applications but also throughout the whole infrastructure. That's the big deal. So you basically create a template for a cluster within your GitOps configuration. You create a new instance of such a cluster. You can extend it by a certain configuration if you want to or if you need to, but it's still derived from one template. And if you then change the template, you can change a lot of clusters that are, you know, maybe the same flavor. So that gives you a lot of power in terms of managing a big fleet of clusters where you want to have a standardization when it comes to governance, also when it comes to security. So it gives you one control interface that is very powerful because under the hood, we have worked on lots of building blocks that are configurable. So it's not a black box. It's, you know, still a Kubernetes. You can see everything. You can change everything. Also, we're providing the cluster API interface. It's not that we're putting a giant swarm interface in front of it. So basically, you have a very powerful platform, but you can make it simple to automate your fleet of clusters. That's I think the big change for me, because like with our own operators, you could configure things through CRDs, but we never really made the GitOps functionality for the clusters themselves production ready feature. We've used it with some customers. We've done it. But now with Cluster API, we can do the full GitOps management of the clusters themselves.
So full, just for the detail, we set up our management cluster inside the data center of the customer or inside the AWS or Azure or whatnot account. And from then on through GitOps, they can go from nothing to a running workload cluster with all the applications managed by us and all their applications in that cluster in a standard definition, meaning also theoretically in a disaster recovery case, they could instantiate the entire thing from scratch, depending a few things that might like connections to firewalls on-prem or kind of like that can't be automated. But in general, theoretically, what can be automated until the very end.
Yeah, you can create, instantiate a cluster and then tear it down again and create it again if you want to. You can have 100 clusters derived from one template and change some settings. And it's just one variable that you're going to change, but it's going to propagate to all the clusters. And you can do the same thing for applications, and you can have stages configured. So if you want to have like dev stage, production stages, and different settings on those. So it's very powerful to not only manage the Kubernetes clusters, but also all the applications and services that you're running on top of it, including adding your own functionality to the management cluster. So kind of we are allowing the customers to also extend the management API if they create their own operator, or if they want to have an operator running on the management cluster that that we are not providing out of the box. They can install that operator, extend the management API, and then through the same GitOps interface, they can also use that functionality. So it's also extensible from that point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just remembered, I think one of our factory customers is actually building something around that to automate all the data collection, which needs some special format or something. So yeah, this is just interesting to see also how customers start seeing the power once it's there and once they see what is all possible and that it's a really new way of working with things. How do you see teams changing? And we already restructured like teams around different capabilities a lot. But how do you see that changing long-term with Cluster API? With more providers coming out, will we get a maturity matrix of Cluster API providers in general out there in the market? You shared a link like yesterday or something with like a gazillion, it feels like, Cluster API providers that all are in a different state. And everybody's talking about we're using Cluster API. But that seems to be, there's a big difference between using Cluster API and using Cluster API, it seems.
No, it's different providers have been around for a certain amount of time. There's a different amount of people working on those. Some of them are kind of official, and then like Microsoft or VMware, they're working on their own Cluster API providers. But there are also others that were started by maybe just a single person. Obviously, you need to look into what's the state of the provider, and then evaluate how much we would need to add to make it a stable and secure and whatever use case the use case of the customer requires. Some of them might still be work, but the good thing is that it's work we're doing within the community. It's made available for everyone, and we prefer to work that way than building our own operators. And then in terms of the team structure, that was funny because we kind of had to do an exercise of reverse Conway's law. So Conway's law is kind of, the architecture and systems design is related to the team structure. So the result of, having engineering teams building software is that the architecture will be heavily influenced by the teams, because teams try to build their own things and create boundaries around themselves, and then talk to other teams and consume their APIs and so on. So, but in the case of switching over to cluster API, there was already an architecture. And then we kind of had to reverse the law and look at how we designed the teams that would map to the architecture, it helped us to have teams that are that know very well certain providers, but we also have teams that are working on more generic functionality. For instance, the Kubernetes version that we're providing. So providing a Kubernetes version is coming from a team that works across providers and then works together with the teams that are more knowledgeable around the infrastructure layer of creating the clusters. And that is a result. Like, we wanted to have something like that before, but since we didn't have that design in our own operators, it didn't play out that well. Cluster API helped us to create teams. Like, we have a team that is responsible for all sorts of authentication and kind of providing this management interface on the management clusters. And we have a team that's responsible for
the
Kubernetes
ONDC integration for users of our customers, for example.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I didn't want to totally interrupt.
No.
Okay, so we have one team for the management cluster itself. So the thing that manages the Kubernetes clusters. And then?
And then we have another team that's responsible for the Kubernetes version that is released. That not only includes Kubernetes itself, but also we have a bunch of, we call them default apps. DNS and Cert Manager and things like that that are bundled together. Once you create a cluster, we know all the versions of all the tools that work and have been tested by us in that constellation, and we call that a release. We have a team that is creating these kind of releases now. We know for sure that Kubernetes 1.25 and the Ingress controller and all the other tools that we're deploying on a cluster work well together.
Mm-hmm. So theoretically, also that means your Kubernetes version will be the same if you're running in Azure and in a factory on VMware and so on and so forth. It'll all be one integrated version with every tooling the same thing, and you can run it across everything. That's the goal, which
yes, makes yeah. sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I'm really looking forward to not having the legacy stuff anymore. That's the next big step. Where do you see that going from a giant swarm perspective? Like down the road, how hard will it be to do a new provider? Do you think they will all get to a certain standard where we can just say, okay, next one is easy, maybe in 3 years? Or is that already the case? Or how heterogeneous is that still out there, that it's just not everything the same thing?
I think the more experience we have with certain features, on one cloud or one infrastructure, and then adding that functionality to another one, it obviously will help us. In case functionality is missing, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously, even though we don't know the exact state of every provider yet, and doing some POCs at the moment to evaluate and figure out more about like what's the state of this provider. But the more we integrate, the easier it will be. Mm-hmm. Not only from like it's one standard and we know how those components are designed and we just need to switch out a provider, but also in terms of, okay, there's like certain functionality is missing. Like let's say we need private networking or something like that, and that's missing. It's also getting easier for us to implement the same thing in another provider just because we have done it in another one.
Yeah, and we need them on par. If we want to deploy the same Kubernetes version, we can't, like, sorry, the cluster isn't private here on this other provider. That would be stupid. So, yeah. That will continue being interesting in the coming months and years. So, really looking forward to it. So, is there anything else you want to add? Because we're already at our threshold way beyond the 30 minutes we normally have. And I think we didn't once hear Tommy's voice.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how to get Tommy out of his comfort zone, but
yeah, sure. It's the thing is that on these is I could only produce noise.
Yeah, but while y'all sometimes are talking. Noise is really good, you know.
Sure.
Exactly.
It's hot air noise.
Hot air noise. But I think, I mean, that was good, and actually also good for me to think again about like where this came from and where this is going and how this all works. So thank you, Timo, for being here and giving us the lowdown. And I'm looking forward to questions coming in from customers and potential customers that listen to this one, where they might have questions how this really works and what's the difference to their current implementation or what their current provider they're using or their current service company they're using and so on and so forth. So that'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to lots of questions. Please share, like, subscribe, everybody that is listening to this. And I'm looking forward to more conversations, and we'll have you again, Timo, probably after we transferred every cluster over, and we'll talk about all the shit show that happened when we moved clusters from legacy to cluster API. There's bound to happen something that is worth talking about, even though at the moment with all the testing it looks really good, but something always breaks. So
it's all carefully planned, so it's gonna be totally boring.
That would be the wonderful thing. Now it's totally boring. Like we plan for every eventuality and everybody is up all night and like upgrading those clusters, and then nothing happens and everybody's happy.
I'm gonna edit that part out.
No, you were not editing, and we're not editing anything out here. This just worked wonderfully well. So Thank you, Timo, for being here. It's been a pleasure. Take care. Thank you, Tommy, for listening.
I'm here for y'all.
Thank you, guys. Great.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.